I'm thinking how good it is to have this focus on baseball, on a game, and how thrilling and excruciating it is to have our team playing in the World Series. In a way, it's a relief to step so thoroughly into this other world, this green fields of the mind baseball world, at least for a little while. Because baseball's world has such clear rules enabling us to know precisely how it's played, precisely what to expect. And this is not to say there isn't room, lots of room, for the improbable or for chance or luck to carry the day, as we saw last night in the ninth inning. But always, the sides play by exactly the same rules. Three strikes, you're out. No matter who you play for, no matter which side you're on, no matter what. Who knows, maybe every generation has believed that the dangers it faced were grave and unique to their era. And whether we agree with Jessica Stein that terrorism is the gravest danger we face today, it does seem as though terrorism holds an unrivaled place in our lifetimes. And if Stern is right and religious terrorism is a kind of psychological warfare, then we know at the very least that it is a complex phenomenon far beyond the good guy, bad guy dichotomy, which is the way it is frequently described. How often have we heard our own national leaders speak of hunting down and killing specific terrorists as if eliminating particular individuals would solve the day, end the threat? What gets left out of this too simplistic response is the motivation. Why people choose to commit these terrible acts, why some people feel their world is unraveling to the point that they are so desperate to stop it and impose their vision of the world order that they will use absolutely any means to try to do so. What also isn't addressed is the fact that people who commit acts of terrorism are not in any way united. They're not one religion or one ethnicity or one nationality. They're not from one political party or even from one area of the world. They are everywhere, and there are no rules governing any of them. Sometimes, like Reverend Michael Bray, they are ministers. Bray is a Lutheran who was convicted of blowing up 7 abortion clinics in 3 different cities. That was so long ago that he's now served his sentence and he's out of prison. I read he's reputed to be well-spoken about theology and politics, and for whatever this is worth, that he enjoys a glass of wine before dinner. The point being that he is far from the stereotype we might have of a deranged, narrow-minded, unthinking, rigid fundamentalist. But he does share the same kind of post-millennialist Christian thinking as terrorists with more familiar names, such as Paul Hill, who murdered a doctor and clinic escort, and Eric Rudolph, who bombed the Atlantic Olympics, and most famous of all American terrorists, Timothy McVeigh. And sometimes, like Baruch Goldstein, terrorists are doctors. Goldstein, too, is an American. He grew up in Brooklyn, went to medical school here, and then moved to Israel. There were no indications that he was anything other than a decent man who became completely overwhelmed in his dedication to the religious vision of his community in Israel. Eventually, he came to believe that that community was being assaulted to the point that he retaliated by killing 30 innocent Muslims while they were praying at the tomb of the patriarchs. I suppose there are hundreds and hundreds of examples of individual terrorists, housewives and students and Christians, Jews, Muslims, and if tomorrow we captured each and every one of them, would the threat of terrorism really go away? In his book, Terror in the Mind of God, sociologist Mark Juergensmeyer says no. The common denominator uniting people who commit acts of terror, whether here in Boston or Iraq or Japan or anywhere, is their belief that they are living in a world at war and that their way of life or their faith or their God is under siege. And that belief justifies their ability, their willingness to commit these terrible acts of violence because in their minds, these actions are legitimate acts of warfare. And almost always, as we know, in their minds, the violence is for a higher cause and a greater good. When Dishokar Saranov was hiding in Watertown in that boat in April, he wrote a note saying that the bombing they carried out was retaliation for American attacks on Iraq and Afghanistan. When you attack one Muslim, he wrote, you attack all Muslims. Were these brothers deranged to do what they did, or were they so totally convinced of the legitimacy of their mission that they were willing to die for it? Dishokar said of his older brother who was killed that day, I'm not sad he's dead. My brother is now a martyr in paradise. The goal, says Juergensmeyer, is the same. People who commit acts of terrorism do it both to terrify people and to make a symbolic statement. When the planes went into the Twin Towers on 9/11, we were terrified. But the goal was not to destroy the New York Stock Exchange or even kill as many people as they could, but it was rather to symbolically challenge the power of Western capitalism. 9/11, blowing up the federal building in Oklahoma, the bombing of the Westgate Mall in Nairobi, and the suicide bombings in restaurants and buses and neighborhoods in the Middle East are all designed to be what's called theatrical displays of deliberately exaggerated violence. Familiar, secure places like malls and subways, trains and offices are most often targets because the more familiar the place, the more terrifying it is to have it turned into mayhem. Going back for a moment to the American terrorists who I described earlier as post-millennialist Christians, we see that through their worldview, why they would commit these acts. They believe that Jesus will only return after 1,000 years of Christian rule. So it's their sacred obligation to do whatever they can to destroy the un-Christian or anti-Christian liberal secular influences on today's world and create a social order based on biblical law. What's terrifying in this cosmic war, whether here or in Nairobi or wherever, is a perception that one's government may not be able to prevent terrorism, making people feel that all of the efforts by the police and security forces are not enough to secure public spaces, and that is always ground for terrorism's side. Just as these acts are intended to do, they cause responses of terror. Both the media and our government called 9/11 an act of war. This, says Juergensmeyer, was exactly what al-Qaeda wanted, because 3 years earlier, Osama bin Laden had announced that based on everything we had done in the Middle East, we had already declared war, but not war on a place or war on a country. The war we were waging, in his mind, was a war on God. And it wasn't just bin Laden who talked about the forces of evil waging a war against God. Other terrorists say it too. They speak in terms of a cosmic struggle, and that's the dangerous point of no return about terrorism, because there's no entry point. There's no way to compromise. There's no way to negotiate or mediate in these all-or-nothing struggle to the death, good versus evil, Armageddon-like battles. And while no wars are good wars, cosmic wars are truly in a different category, because not only do their proponents see these wars as divinely sanctioned, but their goal is not peace. It's the empowerment they get from inflicting violence. Therefore, it's in the group's interest to be in a state of war, because being at war offers them the moral justification they need to inflict violence, and the violence in turn offers them the illusion of power. El Shahab is the Somalian-based cell of Al-Qaeda that claims responsibility for the Westgate Wall attack. Why did they do it? Why did they carry out a mass shooting that killed 72 people? Because, in their words, their purpose is to wage jihad against the enemies of Islam. So isn't that saying that war itself is the goal? What waging cosmic wars offer those who do it is certitude about the world they live in, no matter where in the world they are. Most importantly, says Jürgensmeyer, is the hope of victory that cosmic wars hold out, because a victorious triumph would be a grand moment of social transformation, transcending all worldly limitations. And there's the bliss that Stern talks about. The bliss, and one does not, as she says, abandon that easily. There's so much to all of this, so much more than we can begin to even tap on a Sunday morning sermon, but I don't want to leave this subject without at least touching on the conditions that, if not give rise to terrorism, at least contribute to fostering environments in which terrorism can root. I'm just going to read the next quote. The cosmic wars in which radical religious movements envision themselves engaged impart a sense of importance and destiny to those who find the modern world to be overwhelming, chaotic, and dangerously out of control. These imagined wars identify the enemy, the imputed source of their personal and political failures. They exonerate these would-be soldiers from any responsibility by casting them as victims, giving them a sense of potential for power and arming them with moral justification and sometimes military equipment to engage in battle both figuratively and literally. And like real soldiers in real armies, the imagined soldiers of cosmic wars tend to be young and male. Think about Hamas, for instance. The vast majority of their members are young, single men. The unemployment rate for young men in Palestine is about 50%. So, jobless and without the stability of family, because they're too old to really be part of their parents' families, and they're too poor to have families of their own, so these young men are actually marginalized in their own society. So Hamas capitalizes on this catch-22 dilemma and channels this enormous young male energy of frustration into a family-like community with an ideology that both explains the source of their problems and gives them hope. So be wary, says Stern, of labeling perpetrators as manifestations of evil rather than seeing them as suffering human beings beleaguered by unmet aspirations and despair. Life circumstances is not an excuse for the horror and terror of terrorism, but the reality is that terrorism is part of today's world, and it is increasingly important to try to understand the psychological and economic components. Somehow, we have to learn how to keep faith with the family of all humanity. And Lord only knows how. It's hard enough in our own small families or even our own church family. We find ourselves at odds with people around us, people we care about, people we love and choose to live with. And yet, I think that there may be a lesson about family, which is that except in cases of self-defense or self-preservation, we don't break the bonds. We may differ, get mad, make up, and go on, but all the time we stay in relationship, and sometimes it's hard. Sometimes it's really hard, and sometimes it's wonderful, and sometimes it's a little of both. But the bonds of our caring and commitment are what help to see us through. Can we not hope that there is a way to do this on a more global level? I think I might be wrong about baseball being a diversion from the real world, at least this year, because nothing quite brings home the reality of our most recent terrorist experience as seeing the victims of the Boston Marathon bombing standing on the mound in Fenway Park all season long, some in wheelchairs, some on prosthetics, throwing out the first pitch of the game. And if the Red Sox win the World Series, there will be a parade in Boston, a marvelous celebration of a parade. And in the back of all of our minds, the entire time, will be what happened on April 15th. But we will have that parade, and baseball fans from all over New England will come. They'll come to celebrate, and a big part of that celebration will be the small miracle that a year ago this time, this team was in last place, and now they are in the World Series, proving that nothing in this life stays the same. So let us have faith that change is always possible, and that one day the world will be a better and a safer place for everyone. Everywhere. So may it be. Amen.